You've heard some individual comments on pace line selection. Now we're seated around a table. Several of the people who you heard individually are now gathered here to comment jointly. Let me start the ball rolling by saying that we have stated in the manual that you should not try to intellectualize pace line selection too much. We have discovered that the persons who try to verbalize and intellectualize exactly how they do it are having the most trouble because they're not letting their subconscious do the work for them. It was not a myth when we stated that if you pick enough successful pace lines, your subconscious will do the job for you automatically. And the way you train your subconscious is to see when you have picked a wrong pace line, which pace line, if you had chosen it, would have been successful. Always do regression on yourself. If you've made a mistake, see what the mistake was, do a postmortem, correct it, see what pace line, had you chosen it, would have been the winning pace line, and you will automatically digest correct pace line selection, as these gentlemen have all done. So in attempting to verbalize this, all of us are, in a sense, going against the grain of what has been successful for us. Do you agree with that, Al? That it's a kind of a something that becomes a part of your system?
Yes, I do. However, I think that, like in everything else, practice makes perfect. And I don't think that you can expect yourself to pick the appropriate pace line by just doing some handicapping now and then. I think I have to keep my hand in throughout the year, and if the tracks in your area aren't open, that you should still be buying some forms and practicing, because the more practice you have, it seems the easier it is to pick a pace line.
That's an excellent point. Just practice as you would any other profession. As athletes practice, as doctors and lawyers practice, we practice so long that we hope that they'll get it right one of these days. That's what someone said to me. I said I was in private practice for years. He said, well, if you've been practicing long enough, you ought to be able to get it right. Larry, you're the newest PERCO member. Have you any thoughts to add to this this problem?
Well, other than in the manual, you use your best races on a fast track at the same track, and I look at the half-mile speed, whether it be a route or a sprint, and I'll take the pace line from the race with the highest half-mile speed.
That's it. That's what we do, especially in the California circuit, where the second call or the half-mile in a sprint only, you know, will finish. We just automatically even just write down the fractional times without reducing them to feet per second, and determine the horses that are consistently the best at that point. And you usually find that they're among the winners. Well, Frank, you had problems in the beginning in picking a pace line, which you've overcome. Let somebody hear your comment.
Well, I think that initially my approach wasn't too organized. I found that if I start off, for example, by reading the conditions of the race and see how the race is set up, then I can put each horse in a proper perspective. And from that standpoint, it gives me a feel for each horse of the race that is in the race and how they're going to compete against one another.
Ron, how about you? You've always said that anybody who could pick the right pace line could make $1 million with the method. What progress did you make from your earlier stages of being befuddled by it to your present position?
Well, I'd like to go back to your opening remark about the subconscious mind forgetting all your failures and picking your successes and going from there. I think it's very important that you have a positive attitude when you approach the selection of the pace line, because if you don't have a positive attitude about the selection, you're going to have problems. There's no doubt about that. I think that was one of my problems in the beginning. that I wasn't approaching it with a positive attitude. As far as any detailed selection of the take line, one of the first things I do is I like to, like Frank, read the conditions of the race and then just sort of scan all the horses in the race so that I get a mental picture of what's going to be happening in that particular race. And then I go into the more detailed selections after that.
Okay, we're going to take a race here in a moment and collectively pick a pace line. Bob, you started with the method winning the pick six and have been going downhill ever since. Bob is consistently in the 70% area and has always attributed his success to his immediate ability to catch on to how to pick a pace line. So would you share a couple of thoughts with us before we do a rundown on a pace line?
Well, the first thing I do when I look at the form is I start at the bottom of the horse's past performances and just scan upward. And I'm not the only one in this group that does this. What I'm looking for immediately is a pattern, a training pattern, or a pattern of a horse working himself up to a good race. And I'm looking at the second call times as I'm scanning up, and is finished at or near today's level, and preferably on the same surface. What I'm hoping for is to always be able to use the last race if possible. I've found that that's very helpful.
Mm-hmm. Good point.
If I cannot use the last race, I want to use the most recent good effort at or near today's level.
All right.
That seems to have been working all right.
I'm going to, if anybody forgets to memorize exactly what the form prints, I'll put this in the middle of the table. And we will start, I'm looking at a race here at Arlington, it doesn't matter what the track is. And to review what everyone has said, the first thing we look at are the conditions of the race. Those are the conditions of the race. The most important thing I look for is the purse, the sex, and the age. If it's for fillies and mares, that's one thing. But if it's for open and you have some fillies and mares in the race, that's another thing. If it's for colts and geldings, and the age is 3-year-olds and up, do I have some 4-year-olds and 5-year-olds mixed in with 3-year-olds? All these things I look for. As we all do. Now we know that we've established the purse of the race. Now we're going to look at today's purse value of each horse. So I do, just with a hand calculator, determine the average purse value of the horse I'm looking at. If the average purse value of that horse exceeds today's purse, I'm not going to throw that horse out because his pace lines don't look good. All right, the first thing you see on the pace line is the date. You guys jump in here anytime you feel like it. If the date is too far back, we're not necessarily going to discount the horse, but we're going to certainly circle that and make a note of the fact that he has not raced recently. If it is the first race over a given track, we're going to note that too. What we are looking for is either an excuse to use the last race or to not use the last race. For instance, if a horse raced first time in a year was his last race, you're certainly not going to go back into another year to get a pace line. You're going to have to ascertain his capabilities from what he did in his last race. The next thing we see, of course, is the distance of the race. Is the distance compatible with today? Now, any of you gentlemen have some comments? A lot of people would like to go back to a similar distance or the same distance, and they do it by writ. And we don't recommend that. The horse is running 6 furlongs today, and his last race was a 6.5. What do we do? Do we take the 6.5, or do we automatically look for a 6?
I will still try to find the most recent race with a good effort.
Yeah, right.
And adjust that race to today.
Yeah.
Because that's what the horse has done recently. Even though it's not at this distance, if we can use our distance adjustments to bring him in line with his competition,
Another thing that I've noticed that people do is they see a route in the last race, they immediately want to go back to a sprint, and they fail to look at the internal fractions in that route if today's a sprint. They fail to ask themselves, why is he going into a sprint today? And frequently they'll find the answer in the internal fractions of that route. Have you found that that is a profitable thing to investigate?
I've found that to be one of the best payoff situations at nearly any track. And that is when you have a router that's going into a sprint. Most of the betting public do not look at internal fractions. They just do not have either the knowledge or the time or interest to do so. And there's some very good betting opportunities for routers going into sprints.
That's on page 50 of the manual for those who might have overlooked the method by which we take a horse from a route to a sprint. Okay, the next thing we're looking for are the fractional times of the race. And that, of course, what we're the most interested in. But right after the final fraction, the final time of the race, is the indication of the condition of the track. Supposing it says muddy. Well, that concerns me a lot more than if it says slow or good or fast. Muddy, and a horse does exceptionally well when it's muddy, you find that taking one off the mud might do. If he ran well in the mud, there are some horses that just can't run other than in the mud very well.
Well, if you look beside their name, it'll tell you whether or not the horse is a mudlot. If the horse has never done well in anywhere in his list of past performances on anything other than a muddy track, then I wouldn't use him, unless today's track happened to be muddy. Some horses just can't perform unless they get their particular surface, so weather has a lot to do with it. I try as best I can to always use a pace line from what we anticipate the surface to be at today. It's not always possible, but you should work towards that.
We did not comment on this in the manual, but I have found out it's a very useful tool. The next line on the past performances is the odds at which the horse ran its last race. Have any of you people been looking at the odds in helping you select your pace line? Larry?
I look at odds in the big picture. Frankly, I want a good payoff, so I'm not really disappointed if the horse has been running at higher odds in the past, but I compare that to the class level that he's been running at versus what he's running at today. For instance, if he's been running a couple of levels up over today's claiming value and at obviously higher odds, then that's a pretty good indicator that the fact that he's running at a lower level today, his odds should come down. But if they don't come down, then there may be some physical problems that the horse is having that will indicate that even with the drop, the horse isn't going to perform.
Larry, you got some additions to make?
When you talk about odds, it has to be at the same track, too.
Good point. Hadn't thought of that too much, but it's an excellent point. The way I look at odds is if I think that's a whale of a pace line that I'm looking at, and I think that the class may be comparable today, and I see the horses going off at 40-1, I ask myself, why did you think that? There's got to be some reason that went off at 40-1, and then I might take a second look at that pace line and realize that that horse was outclassed at that particular. The one thing that will confuse people sometimes is they fail to say when they say $15,000, I think it's a claiming race, they will not look at where it says allowance or where it says estate bred. You've got to make sure that you're looking at the classification of the race in dollars in the same category as today, allowance or claiming.
Howard, I might go back just one step back, and that is on these off tracks. Sometimes you'll find that what it's labeled as an off track may be as fast or faster than a fast track. A track labeled sloppy sometimes, which is drying out after a rain or the first day of a rain, can be a very quick track. And you should look at the daily track variant to see if it is unusually slow or whether it, even though it's labeled as sloppy, is running as fast as a regular track.
That's a very excellent point. The track I'm looking at, for instance, says muddy. The daily variant was 38, which indicates it truly was muddy. And depending on the area of the country, the person who designates the condition of the track has a little bit of the spirit of the Chamber of Commerce in him. And if the sun is shining in California, he'll label it fast. And it's not fast by our standards, and unless the horses are running according to the bias of the track. All right, the next line is a line that is, of which there are many myths written and probably a lot of good material written. It's the jockey line. Al, what do you do about the jockey?
Well, I look to see, in effect, who's been riding the horse in the past, because I think it's a measure of trainer intent. Good trainers will use good jockeys on horses that they feel have a chance. And if I'm looking at a horse that's been run by, been ridden by the bottom of the barrel jockeys, then I figure that this trainer really doesn't think much of his charge. If I see a change to one of the top jockeys, then I believe that the trainer's intent is changing. And so I'm not really concerned who the jockey is, but whether he's a good jockey or a bad jockey, and that's, to me, I put in as part of the measurement of the trainer's intention.
Frank, you got anything to say on jockeys that dispel myths or encourage myths or whatever?
Well, I do look at the more experienced jocks, and I do find that the horse is prone to running better with a better jock, and therefore that might affect his times and how he has positioned himself in the race and how well he does in that race. So it is something that you do want to take a look at each time you are in the process of selecting a line.
Ron, anything on jockeys?
I don't think I have anything to add, except I would agree with what Al said, that take a look at the jockey, see whether the trainer is switching to a top jockey, because that's a spot play, and usually it's fairly indicative of that the horse is going to be trying to win today.
Bob is our resident expert on jockeys and trainers. How have you found they affect the use of the methodology?
Well, oddly enough, I don't put a whole lot of weight on the jockey. I put more weight on the trainer, because the trainer makes all the decisions. A lot of time he doesn't have much control over the jockey. Jockeys have their problems. They're represented by agents. And it's actually the agent's job to find employment for the jockey. And the agent sometimes thinks he can put a jockey on a winner, but the agent's doing the handicap, and he's not the trainer. The trainer calls the shots. The only thing I look really for is if my horse appears to be a contender today, if there's a jock switch, I try and find a reason for it. If it's not the same jockey that the horse has been accustomed to, then I look to see where that jockey may be today, and if there's a reason why he's not on the horse.
Bob told me something. Bob is very conversant with trainers and jockeys personally, and he told me something which is very interesting. And it points out the fact that a positive jockey switch may be indicative, but a negative is not necessarily so, because Lafitte Pinquet told you that he was taken off of a horse and put onto another horse, and that the public immediately assumed that he was switching horses because the horse he was now riding was the better mount, and the one he was originally going to ride was not. Pinkai's statement was that he would much rather have been on the former horse, but his agent switched him merely for future assignments.
That's quite true. He had made an arrangement. This was told not just to me, but to a large group of people who were attending a little seminar that Pinkai was speaking at. And the race happened to be running that day. This was prior to the day's races. And he said, in the ninth race, I would much to have preferred to have been on this horse, but because of employment agents, arrangements made by my agent for future bookings, I'm riding a horse today that I really just wouldn't care to be on. And
right.
The horse that he would have preferred did act, in fact, win the race. So
Well, what we have found, just summing up on jockeys and on trainers, that almost always, when you've used the method correctly, the horses that you pick for your ultimate betting will be trained by adequate trainers and ridden by adequate jockeys. Otherwise, they would not have supplied you with the figures, both in feet per second and class, that would have made you choose them.
Absolutely right.
The best jockeys ride the best horses. The best horses get ridden by the best jockeys, and they're trained by the best trainers, and we pick the best horses. So only in a situation that Al pointed out where a horse is ridden by a very bad jockey, and we don't have in the California circuit too many bad jockeys. Of course, the smaller track is all relative. What is a bad jockey as opposed to a good jockey? It certainly has nothing to do with the win-loss record as much as it has to do with how a horse is handled by that jockey in the course of a race. Some do make bad rides, but on the other hand, some of the better ones make bad rides. Chris McCarron didn't do too well on John Henry in a couple of instances. So the best can do a bad ride. Al?
Well, as I mentioned, I think, you know, the jockey indicates what the trainer thinks of the horse in the past, and I think that's important too. The assignment of the lesser light jockeys to ride horses in the past indicates that the trainer didn't think too much of the horse.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is that these switches are important, but to me, I'm looking at the past performance lines, and I don't know who's riding the jockey today because the form doesn't tell you. In that area, you have to look in the sweeps part or the analysis part to find out who is actually riding the horse today. So when I do my analysis, I just look at the pace at the past performances, and I get my pace line and then run my horse. Then if I, after I've got my contenders and made my ratings and so on, if I find that there is a jockey switch to a top jockey or that a good jockey is riding the horse, then that's a plus to me. But I don't use it as a factor.
Okay, I think everybody has said in his own way that you must start, even though Bob starts at the bottom and works up because he's looking for form cycle. But in picking a pace line, you have to look at the last race. And if you cannot find an excuse not to use that last race, don't go back any farther than the last race. Now that should be your first rule. Use the last race unless you have a valid reason for going one more back. Then you look at that one. You must have a valid reason not to use that one, to go back one more, and so forth. And going back more than three or four, you're going to have to come up with a very valid excuse because you're looking beyond the recency factor.
It's called wishful thinking.
Yes.
Really.
Okay, and so...
Is a difference in class level a reason to go back? For instance, if today's race is a $20,000 claimer, and the last race was run at, say, 32, and the race before that was run at 20, Bob, which line would you prefer to use?
I'd prefer to use the race at the $20,000 level, which is nearer or at today's race. If the horse performed well at 32,000 and did not win, but his pace line would make him a real contender in today's race, then I still would use the last race.
Would you suggest running both pace lines and get a comparison?